Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We're going to be talking about the Billy Meier case this evening. And I wanted to go back over a little section on the creational natural laws. Since creation, the universal consciousness, we cannot think of as a person or a father. We must understand that the universal consciousness is an impersonal energy, although ironically it radiates love. And it has created in our universe certain natural laws that exist. Gravity is one. Cause and effect is another. Another law is the law of love, and we've talked about this, that the incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation. Now, creation, again, is an impersonal spiritual energy or power, and it doesn't really stipulate commands the way our religions have told us. Now, according to the Meier information, and I always like to say it that way, to present it in a neutral fashion and not to be dogmatic, so that you can always have the freedom to make your mind up one way or another. But according to the Meier information, the commandments that appear, there are 10 commandments, really not were not given directly by God, but they came down from these higher spiritual planes called the Patali level. And that these commands always come down from people or from higher spiritual levels, but never from the universal consciousness. The universal consciousness doesn't give commands. Again, it's neutral positive. It is neither good nor evil. It's focused on evolution, and it creates human spirit forms as a form of to aid in its own evolution. So your spiritual consciousness is on a journey of millions and millions and millions of years of reincarnating into physical bodies to gather wisdom and to gather knowledge and to go up through 7 evolutionary stages, 5 of which you live in material physical bodies. The 6th stage is the transition period between spiritual and physical. And then in the 7th stage, you're back into a purely physical form. And eventually, you take all of your knowledge and all of your experience and all of your wisdom back to creation with you. And this universal consciousness absorbs all the information that you experience, your friends experience, etc., all the billions of people that are on this planet and are on many other planets. Now, the key to happy, healthy, successful living on the earth, in part, is following these creational natural laws. And one of those creational natural laws is the law of striving. And the other that we've been emphasizing is the law of love. The law of striving involves continual work on your part to work to understand these principles that I'm talking about now, to work to in your day job, to work in your hobbies, always pushing to evolve yourself, to improve yourself. And that's actually where you'll get your real satisfaction out of life, as you improve yourself through these various avenues of interest that you have. So, and there are commandments that have come down from the Patali level, the Decalogue and the Dodecalogue, that talk about certain ideas. For example, we should not kill in depravity. That's kind of you can almost think of that as kind of a creational natural law in a sense. It's really more of a command, though. And you shall not rob and expropriate. That's another command that's come down from these higher spiritual levels, these higher planes. Do not curse the truth. Do not greedily covet material wealth in your neighbor's possessions. Never, never put creation's commands and creation's laws into unworthy cults. And that's one of the things that the Meyer material teaches us, is that our religions have gone off base and have twisted the material that we have in the spiritual teachings. I wanted to just touch that briefly. I think I have Nate on Skype now. Is this Nate? 559?
Yeah.
Nate, how are you this afternoon?
Pretty good. How am I coming in?
You're coming in a whole lot better. Thanks for calling in on Skype. Did you want to kind of dovetail off what I was talking about and slowly move into your topic this evening, since you're going to kind of be presenting something?
You could like continue where you were going with it.
Okay.
I was always trying to get plugged in on the chat room and stuff.
Okay. You're breaking up just a little bit now. So I will, I think I'll put you just back on mute for a second, and then I'll kind of continue with where I was going there. One of the creational natural laws is reincarnation. And I really spend a lot of time focusing on understanding this, because I think it's really important for us to kind of sort out all these details. The spirit form is the permanent part of you. You have something called the spirit form. It resides in an area of your midbrain called the superior colliculus. In the German, it's referred to as the Geist form. Your spirit form, if you're a typical Earth human, has been in existence for 4 to 5 million years, according to the book The Psyche. Now, there are older spirit forms on the Earth, as old as 8 to 12 million years. These are human beings that came here from other worlds and were in some of these ancient cultures that existed on the Earth, Atlantis and Lemuria, back 133,000 years ago, 150,000 years ago. A man named Peladon here brought a lot of extraterrestrial humans to the Earth. In the southwestern United States was a group of extraterrestrial humans that destroyed themselves in nuclear war, and that's how we got Fire Valley and Death Valley. So the news here is that your spirit form is much older than you realize, and you've had many, many lifetimes and many, many opportunities to solve some of the problems that you may be having in terms of evolution. Now, interestingly, according to Meyer information, not only did the Earth support human life, but Mars supported human life, and another world in our solar system called Melona supported human life. So in the ancient past, hundreds of thousands of years ago, there were three planets in our solar system that supported life, three planets that had people on them that were reincarnating and evolving spiritually. Now, Melona was completely destroyed by the people that lived on it. They redirected an ocean into a volcano, which split the planet in half and caused an explosion, which destroyed the planet. That planet became our asteroid belt. A lot of the debris from that planet negatively impacted Mars, and I believe the two kind of changed orbits. They traded orbits. Mars existed for a while in its ravaged state, but eventually all life left Mars as well. So these spirit forms that were on Melona and on Mars move. They have a way to transport themselves through space and time, and the Meyer information never explained how that works, to my knowledge, yet. So these spirit forms are now part of the reincarnational patterns of Earth. So the Earth has older spirit forms than you would otherwise probably imagine. We have spirit forms that are here from cultures that are much more ancient, cultures that had space travel, cultures that had technologies that are probably even a little bit beyond our imaginings right now. So if you ever have a feeling that things are very, very backward on this world and that we have a tremendous talent for causing problems for ourselves, then you may be one of these older spirits. If you're very, very interested in this kind of information, you may be one of these older spirits. So the point of all of this is, in part, the principle of responsibility. Because if you're an older spirit, one of the laws of love that you need to be following is live and help live. Which not only means to help the people that live around you, but to help the flora and the fauna as well. And that's one of the responsibilities. Now, in order to be able to be a helpful person, you're going to have to learn also to control your thinking. One of the big challenges that we have here on the earth is that we do a lot of our thinking unconsciously, and we cause a lot of our own trouble by our unconscious thoughts, which are sometimes semi-conscious, I think, or subconscious, that actually start to create circumstances in our lives. And I'm sure I've done that myself, because all of the circumstances of our life come out of our thoughts. They grow right out of our thoughts. In fact, we all have a creational power, and that creational power comes from our consciousness right up and manifests in our thoughts. So you really are the master of your own destiny, the smith of your own destiny. And it's your thinking that creates the circumstances of your life. Your thoughts also create your feelings. Gefühle in the German means thoughts that come from feelings, and you shouldn't be suppressing these thoughts and feelings that are related. And if you have good thoughts, which are neutral positive, that means they're not too positive, and they're not, of course, negative. Negative thoughts are very destructive, but they're harmoniously balanced. They will lead to good feelings, and good feelings will lead to good habits. You'll start to do certain things in your life at certain times, and you'll start to think certain ways, and you'll start to be more successful, and then the circumstances in your life will slowly change, and it's kind of a snowball that accumulates. And it's all coming from the power of your own thinking. And there's certain things we can do to improve the power of our thoughts, to make our thoughts better. One of which is meditation, and there are certain meditation sentences, certain meditation ideas. There are 77 meditation ideas that the Meyer Information talks about, one of which says, I always remain relaxed and thereby gain might over myself. I always remain relaxed and thereby gain might over myself. I always remain relaxed, thereby I gain might over myself. And you notice the second half of that sentence. You start to gain might over yourself by being relaxed. Some of the other good ones to start to learn. And I say don't try to learn them too fast. Don't push yourself on learning these. Be like the person that runs a little slower in the race and lasts a little longer. And there's something in probably in The Way to Live that talks about the fact that we shouldn't hurry through information like this. And I don't know if my... Yes, let's right here on page 194. May the human being never let himself / herself be seduced by his or her desires to hastily bring some plans into fruition, because good things take time. So since good things take time to learn these slowly and methodically. Get one that you have down cold before you start trying to learn 10 other ones. Therefore, may the human being not pay attention to the small advantages which only dazzle him or her. Slow and steady wins the race. Because all desire for quick accomplishment contradicts all thoroughness. So what you want to be when you study this information is completely thorough. Google meditation from clear visibility. You'll probably be able to find the link that way. So, because all desire for quick accomplishment contradicts all thoroughness, and whoever directs his or her attentiveness at small advantages obstructs all great tasks and the actual success of the fulfillment. So you're trying to work on the big picture. And the big picture is you controlling your thoughts. So take one of these meditations from Clear Visibility and practice the hell out of it until you get good at that one. So after having said that, let me roll on and read a couple others to you. I always do my best and will thus succeed in all that is good. I always look after myself and trust myself. The constant flow of the creational laws and recommendations is within me as prosperity, which I bring to fruition. Good living, riches, and prosperity are within me in the love, in the happiness, in the harmony, peace, and freedom. Within me is everything rich in thoughts and feelings. In order to learn what is rich, to help what is rich, and to bring forth that which is rich. And having said that, I'm going to bring forth Nate here, because I know he's rich, because he's been looking at these meditative sentences longer than I have. How are you, Nate?
Pretty good. I sound better now?
You sound much better.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I had something in my throat, I think.
So what are you going to talk about this evening? You had a little thing you wanted to kind of bring forward, right?
Yeah, we can stem forward from kind of the stuff that has been on my mind recently.
Okay.
Let's see here. So, like, right now at work, we'll just go into, since we're talking about the ways to live, there's different, you know, I'm dealing with different people at my workplace, and one of the persons that I work with has a very intense inferiority complex, which this person will always be putting other people down to bring himself up, or always put himself down in light of other people. And I was slowly working with him over time, but I wasn't seeing any real progress. You know, he would easily slide back into, that inferiority attitude. And it kind of came to a head this past week when I had asked him not to disclose something that we're working on. And he was included in that. And so he went about telling everybody what we were doing, and then at the same time was demeaning us
really?
As a group. Yeah, and he's part of our group, and he just got on our group, which is interesting because, I had fought for him to get, he was in the group called SRE, which was, they look at the site reliability engineering. Basically, they look at the site to make sure there's no glitches in it, and if there is, they report it. But he wanted to be a developer engineer, so he had asked me several times to put in a word for him. I did, and finally he got it. Anyways, you know, I've been helping him out for a while with all that stuff, and so now, after he went about doing a lot of really crazy stuff, not only did he, there was a security hole in our system, and he found it, and then he went about creating more, embellishing the severity of it, and embellishing all kinds of other stuff that went along with it to make himself look really good. He just, like, you would think that if you found a security hole on the stuff that you're working on, you would try to fix it yourself and try to keep it,
quiet.
In line with just, yeah. So he went about emailing all the heads of every department, every IT department. He got on the phone with several of these heads, and at that time he was just started bad-mouthing us like no tomorrow. And the reason why actually this had happened is because I had started an initiative to clean up much of the folder structure. We had about 40,000 files, and we only needed about 20,000 to make the site run. The rest was just junk. So I went about cleaning it up. But one of the problems is the security was held in one of the files, and normally it's held on the server side. And I didn't even think to even, to check if it was being held in one of these files. But needless to say, that file got renamed or got deleted out of the system. It was holding the security down for these other config files. And long story short, it was an honest mistake, and there was not really that big, and not everybody had to be involved, but the CIO of the company.
So let me throw in something here. So I know you're getting to some principle with all this.
Right.
Right. And
hopefully.
Okay. Go ahead. All right. Continue.
Okay. So, part of he had printed out the letter from the CIO and was going around saying, look what the CIO wrote about me. He did a good job. And so it was really weird. So I'm working with this other person who felt, a huge impact from this whole thing. And I was, when they contacted me the night after this had happened, and I was actually studying The Way to Live at the time, and I asked her to pick a number 1 through 500, right? And mm-hmm. So, synchronistic or whatever, however your subconscious works, and hers was working with mine at that time, and she chose 300, right? And so 300. We read 300. Yeah, 300. So
for people that don't know, the book, The Might of Thoughts, is one of the books that Billy has written, and it's been relatively recently translated, and it's broken up into like 500 units, I guess, right, Nate?
No, The Way to Live. Did I say The Might of Thoughts?
No, I said The Way to Live, yes, sorry.
Okay.
My bad. So we're on page 214 in my book, and that's number 300?
Yeah. So let me read that really quick. And this was really interesting, because if the human being goes different ways and have different plans, then they are never able to reach a common zeal. So I thought that was like, wow, this is exactly what we're dealing with here. And so it helped me clarify, what action I would need to take with this other person. Basically ask them, what's your plan? Because that's important, working with groups. Because you had mentioned that, people may be at a higher spiritual level, feel compelled to help other people.
Right. You're breaking up a little bit, man.
If I'm close like this, do I sound good, or I'm just?
You're actually, it's like that like that. I don't know if you're getting too much into your mic or it's your connection.
What about now? Should I be on my cell phone? Because that might be better.
Okay, if you want to try the cell, go ahead. I have no problem with this. I thought the Skype might be better, but it's about the same.
Okay. So let me call on myself.
Okay. All right. We'll try that, folks. Sorry about that. I was hearing the bad quality, and that's kind of hard to listen to sometimes. But in line with the book, The Way to Live, let me read a few more passages from this, which I thought were very, very interesting. If ordered circumstances prevail within the human being, in his inner and outer life, then the determination of his or her inner freedom and further development lies doubtlessly with he, him, herself, and not in the power of others. So the more you start to order your own thinking, the more power you take over in your own life. And there's a couple things that this book emphasizes. One of which is, have you harmonized your personality today? Two, have you evolved your consciousness today? And three, have you helped your fellow man? And I would like to throw in plants or animals as well today. So I think we got Nate back here, and we'll hopefully see if he's a little better. Yeah. Okay, you sound good.
Woohoo. Sorry about that. So I think the thing comes, I'm always asking myself how I can communicate with others. And we had a little discussion yesterday on Skype about how, you know, what is my approach versus what your approach may be, and the different levels. You know, we're not supposed to proselytize per se.
Are you referring to our little text message thing?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's an interesting point. You know, how do you try to help others, and should you try to help others? What I was saying was that most people are not ready for this information at all. But you were saying that you've been having some luck at sharing it with people locally, right?
Yeah, as best I can. And it's not, and oftentimes it's not like a direct telling them, hey, here, this guy over in Switzerland, he's writing these things called the Teachings of the Spirit, check him out. Most of the time, I only have like three different people that I have started with a direct approach like that, and that's at work because I feel that they may be ready for it just by the way they respond and say, oh, well, what else? And what else mm-hmm. do you have? And what else is going on? Then I have other people that I work with, and I work with them indirectly. Like if I tell, you know, like this guy at work that I'm having some problems with, I've been working with him for now almost like 3 years, and I usually go to work really early in the morning, and occasionally this person goes there too early in the morning, and I like to take a walk and, you know, for a break before it gets the sun gets too high. And we usually walk and we talk about different things. And during that time, I'm able to like kind of like, oh, well, what about this and what about that? And have you thought of this, you know? And mm-hmm. one of the last times he was really stressed out. Like this was about 3 weeks ago. He's really stressed out, and I said, have you ever thought about meditating? And I just, it's like I was attacking him, because every time I've said that before in the past to him, it was like his response was, no, I pray. I'm like, okay, it's not the same thing, You know, and how do you communicate that? You know, because even before I with my own family, my mom, I had mentioned, you know, meditation, because she's heavily into the Bible. There's a passage, and I'm not, you know, you're more familiar with this than I am. I think Jesus was talking about how to pray. You know, and basically he was describing meditation. If you think about it, you know, he says find a place that's really quiet, go into a closet or something like that. And does that strike a wish I had a reference to it, but one of Muhammad's first generals was forgot his name off the top of my head, but he was written down his description on how to meditate, and they're really big into meditation, and which might explain.
Let me throw something out here for if we have any new listeners. According to the Meyer information, Billy Meyer, Edward Albert Meyer, his spirit form is 9.6 billion years old. And I know that might be way out for some people. They actually refer to his spirit form using the name Nokodamian. And Nokodamian was the first incarnation. This individual, Nokodamian, was the first lifetime, material lifetime that this spirit form had. Now, the Meyer information traces the spirit form of Edward Albert Meyer as incarnating on the earth for the past 10,000 years or so, as well as on in Lyra Vega, another solar system, and prior to that in another galaxy. So this spirit form is extremely ancient. And now when Nate was mentioning Muhammad and the person that today we call Jesus, according to Meyer information, that the person that we call Jesus today, his real name was Emmanuel. And according to Meyer information, the New Testament is kind of like a fictionalized version of a man's life who really lived. But both Emmanuel and Muhammad taught basically the same information that we have in the Meyer writings today. But over time, that information got distorted and twisted. So instead of a universal consciousness, we now have a God the Father. And instead of having meditation, we have prayer. So, Nate, I'll let you pick up there, and sorry for the long interjection.
No, that, I think that's necessary. Muhammad's first general was I remember seeing this Sam Harris, one of the a writer who's big in the atheist circle. He was pointing this out. He says, you know, what this guy is describing is so fundamentally different than what they teach in the Quran or the Hadith that it makes you wonder, is this actually, this information actually genuine? You know, just as a side note, according to the Meyer material that, I think it was 32 or 22 years after Muhammad had passed away, his cousin started bringing together the first Quran and thereby ultimately started corrupting it. And, you know, I've had many discussions with many different people and stuff and about, you know, the pros and cons. And there's some good things in it. And I think with most holy books, there is some good things in it, but it's mixed in with a bunch of very negative things. One of the things that they had talked about is, you know, or what's justified, what slavery was justified in the U.S. and the people were using the Bible to justify, because the Bible justifies slavery in the Old Testament. That's very interesting. With the Quran and Islam, certain parts of it justify child marriage, you know, because they say, oh, Muhammad married an 8-year-old, you know. And when I had brought this up to one of the guys that I work with, he kind of puffed out his chest in pride. He says, yes, he married an 8-year-old, but he didn't consume the marriage until she was 13. And I go, well, wow, so instead of raping an 8-year-old, he raped a 13-year-old. And his pride went away really quick. So, because he never thought of it like that, you know. And then he comes back and says, well, it was a different time. And I go, but the problem is that narrative isn't being sold today when you have, you know, and it's very poor, you know, what's going on, you know, in many different countries that subscribe to this, you know. So, but anyways, I digress. Whatever we were talking about. This weekend I wasn't able to make it up to the Munns Park meeting, but what we were going to be studying was something that can be found on Beam to Ing Blogspot, and I don't know if you've seen that site.
No, say that again.
Beam to Ing, B-E-A-M, the number 2, and E-N-G, .blogspot.com.
No, that's one I'm not familiar with at all.
Mrs. Ehlinger, the one you often...
Oh, yeah. Maybe I have been to that site. I'd have to double check. Okay. Go ahead.
So we're reading The Way Way of Fulfillment. We're kind of touching on some religious things. And in The Way of Fulfillment, they kind of talk about... it starts with a small story the only way to evolve is through meditation and contemplation. And that's a very powerful thing. And we kind of, when we mention that, oftentimes we say, yeah, why don't you try to take a meditation? But we don't really put a huge emphasis on it. But that is like the key of growth or to growth, and the correct way to grow, right? But at the same time, if people go all out for, you know, with meditation and move towards spiritual, if, you know, they need to stay in balance with their current state of the material, you know, their health, their you know, if they have children, you know, what are they going to do at old age? They need to keep that in balance, right? So and the teachings pretty much talk a lot about staying in balance. I think everything, you know, continuously gets pulled back to a state of balance, and that's important because some of the contact reports. I don't have them offhand. The one I'm thinking of, or I don't know it offhand, but they had mentioned that it's going to be inevitable that the teaching of the spirit are going to be turned into a religion at one point in time.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah, and that may have already happened with the different groups that were being formed around the world, namely here in the U.S. I think they had one called Creational Truth or something like that that was forming.
Let me read something here. I think that it backs up exactly what you're saying. In terms of there being a single teaching of the truth since from the very beginning, you will discover that there was only one single teaching of the truth since the very beginning and continues to be only one that was delivered to all peoples of the earth by various prophets again and again through all the world's eons and continues to be delivered by the current and last prophet of the new time, Beam, from the true line of prophets. This consists of the prophets of Henoch, Elijah, Jeremiah, Jesaja, Emmanuel, Muhammad, and Beam, who all were and all are bearers of Nicodemian spirit form. They all proclaimed and are proclaiming one and the same teaching of the creation, teaching of the spirit, teaching of love, and teaching of the truth, which guarantees evolution in harmony with creation. So I guess what you're saying is there's always been one true teaching, but the religions through various times have kind of distorted this. And you're saying this is going to happen again?
Yes. You know, when a belief takes hold, what it promises is it promises specialness. But the only way you can become special is by separating yourself from others, you know. And I see that a lot in, well, I shouldn't say I see that a lot in, oh, I can say, it's, okay, never mind. I do see that a lot. Like most of the time, if I go over to like They Fly blog, for example, I see a lot of times people putting other people down, you know, and I don't know how sincere they are. Like, oh, these people are stupid, you know, oh, they're so stupid and, you know, we're so much better than they are because they're stupid. And that's one way I'm interpreting it. That may not be what they meant, though, right? So along that line of thinking, that's already drawing a division, you know. But, yes.
You know, one of the reasons that I think we had the falsification of this teaching in the past is because I don't think Henoch, Elijah, Jesaja, Jeremiah, Emmanuel wrote down anything. Is that true? I mean,
yeah,
it wasn't.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. They didn't.
Other people wrote things down, and they may not have always gotten it right. And then, you know, then it got distorted for various reasons even more.
Yeah, and with and that was one of the contentions that who was it? The initial Talmud Emmanuel was translated, but one of the investigators, the late James Dierdorf, had come up with the idea that the Old Testament or the New Testament is actually a plagiarism of the Talmud Emmanuel, right?
Mm-hmm.
But this indeed is not the case. The Talmud Emmanuel was pretty much given to Paul, and he distorted the teachings. And when he had it transcribed, not only his teachings were distorted, and one of his main things is he left out pretty much all the women and made the women look really bad, and just because he had no real game with women, I think. He had a huge inferiority complex, and so he left them all out, as a matter of fact. And then he added his own twists to it, and then not only that, he wasn't able to write, so then when the transcriber, then they also added their own stuff to it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So there, and then it was as it's being passed from time to time, and he goes through different experiences and stuff. And he even in the Talmud Emmanuel, he even met Saul, and he said, "You'll change your name to Paul, or vice versa," and then you're going to corrupt the teachings, and because of you, more blood will be spilled on the planet than our vessels to actually carry blood. More human blood will be spilled in the name of, you know.
Hmm.
And that was interesting. And I think that kind of goes into some of the stuff that you've talked about on previous shows with Constantine.
Yeah, it's very possible. Very possible. It's a strange world we live in, and it's getting stranger all the time. Were you planning on talking anything about electronic media tonight?
Sure, we can cover some of the electronic media.
I didn't know if that was what you were planning on talking about or not.
Oh, no, I just like to share like what's kind of going on in my life. And how I'm applying some of the teachings where I can apply them. You know, you had talked about the 7-7 meditation sentences, and you know, I have these sentences for those. It's not a form of self-delusion. It's a form of exercise, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're trying to do is align your consciousness with a neutral positive. So I had one of these before that I would use that before I even discovered the material, because I wanted to keep myself on even terms with people. And mine would be a quick meditation that I would do in my head. Whenever I would find myself, my mind wandering, and I'd be thinking of something in the past, and like maybe a bully who I thought had wronged me. And if I went into, you know, if I wasn't paying attention, I'd go in and I'd engage it. I'd change the scenario to where I was beating him up now, and or I was getting some sort of revenge. And then I noticed, you know, that emotion was, you know, pulling me inwards towards it. And so I'd say, okay, I, you know, have this quick little thing I would do, say, you know, I forgive you. I accept your forgiveness. Peace, love, and happiness, and let it go, you know.
Mm.
So there's one of the things that it does say about the 77 meditations is that these only represent a small fraction of what is possible out there, and you can come up with your own. I think Michael Udenbrook had one that like this is easy, simple, easy and simple to let go of, or something to that effect. So however it works for you, you don't have to use this. You could use whatever you'd like. And that's what's really important here. But as long as, you know, you're moving forward with it. Because some of the stuff being translated from German to English, I think it might lose some of the potency in the translation.
Speaking of translation, what is happening with the Talmud of Emmanuel? You guys are done with that translation, right?
Yeah, so that's going to be released. I'm hoping sometime in the summer. And it's going to be sold out of Figu, Canada.
Okay.
So I'm very excited with that.
So is it getting printed right now? Or are they making copies?
I don't have that type of detail. The last time I heard was from Blake, and he was very, I don't know if he was upset or whatnot, but there's another guy named Dave, Blake, myself, and Mr. Deerdorf had sponsored the translation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Dave thought that there he was going to have more control over the distribution and printing of it.
Does Figu control that?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
That makes sense to me.
Do you know how many copies they're planning on printing?
I would assume based upon that one, I think they said they do an initial run of 20,000 of every book.
Hmm. That's a lot. That's expensive. That's a lot.
Yeah, definitely.
I can understand that. You know, in case, again, there's people that don't know about the Talmud of Emmanuel, I'll try to the best of my ability give a quick overview of this. And Nate, please jump in here because you probably studied this more than I have. The Talmud of Emmanuel is the story of the life of Emmanuel. And it was written down basically during the time of his life. And it was hidden, and it was discovered by a Greek Orthodox priest by the name of Issa Rashid, and Billy Meyer discovered it as well. Now, because it was written in Aramaic, it had to be translated first by Issa Rashid back into German, and then that translation was sent off to Switzerland. Well, they didn't get the whole translation because Issa Rashid was machine gunned to death by the Mossad. The rest of the manuscript, I think, was burned up. And I think maybe even a good part of his family was killed. Is that true, Nate? Or am I just...
Yeah, his family was murdered. He was murdered. I think that it was Lebanon. There was a refugee camp. And he had been running... and the information pretty much drove him kind of crazy.
Really?
He became kind of paranoid and, you know, talking when he shouldn't talk and overacting, like, you know, kind of like a person looking guilty is going to start attracting the attention of others. Like if you walk in the store, you start looking around like you're stealing something or whatnot, you're going to look guilty, and the people are going to start noticing you, and they're going to go, well, this guy's looking really guilty. What's going on over there?
So the first version of the Talmud that came out was, it was riddled with problems. And some of these problems were related to how Issa decided to translate this because he had a religious background, correct? And Billy was very not happy with this first translation that came out. So there's a version of the Talmud out now that – how would you describe the first version of the Talmud that came out, Nate?
So the first version of the Talmud Emmanuel was published without any copyright – or without any real proofing. Billy at the time was trying to pull together the core group. And You know, his life was constantly in danger. And the Pleioran did a calculation based upon what would happen if he would have released the real true version, the real true translation. Is they said they couldn't have protected him; his life would have been forfeit.
Really?
Yeah. You got to remember that most of the people that came after him, I mean, if they weren't sent by the other ETs, they were religious fanatics that came after him.
Right.
And just imagine if you had something that didn't somewhat sound like the New Testament, where the stories were completely different, but made a huge amount more sense and stuff. And then you started peddling this as, hey, you know, this is the truth. Anyways, when Isa Rashid got a hold of the information, he started interjecting a lot of his own past into it. He couldn't divorce himself from what he had previously been taught or learned, and therefore he ultimately corrupted it and made it so that it did not represent or what truly was written. And then it was destroyed. So then the inquiring minds at home might be asking, well, how then did this new translation come out? Well, according to the information, Billy worked with the storage banks, or the cosmic spider web, or the Akashic records, however you want to however you want to say that. And
did you say the cosmic spider web?
The cosmic spider web, yeah. That's what they call it.
Is that what the Meyer information refers to it as?
Yeah, the cosmic spider.
I have never, ever, ever heard that before. That's so interesting. How strange.
I'll send you this stuff. Where Billy's actually talking about it because he's funny. Maybe that's just an inside joke they have, but I'll
do it. Well, it's very interesting because he pulled down like 14 chapters of the Goblet of Truth from the Universal Storage Banks.
Oh, yeah.
And this makes me think that it's probably an ability that all human beings have.
Absolutely. Let's just change topics really quick, because I think that this is a really fun topic. And this is something I've been thinking about recently. And it has to do with a paper written by them, or by Billy, called The Might of Music. Right.
Hmm.
And in there, this is something Eve pointed out at one of our meetings, and she pointed out that the thing that really stood out to her was that if you harmonize with good music, you're able to differentiate if someone's telling the truth or a lie. And this means that the truth has a resonance, that it has a frequency, it has, you know, it aligns with harmony.
Of course. It's interesting you say that, because it says it right in the spiritual teaching that the spirit will tell you if your thinking is right or wrong if you've learned to pay attention to it.
Hey, you know what? I've never thought of it like that.
Really? Yeah.
A harmony, right?
Sure.
I was thinking more along the lines of a conscience, like, oh, don't step on that spider, you know? But, yeah.
Yeah, I think wrong thinking produces a disharmony in our psyche. And if we can detect that disharmony, then we have to go back to our thinking and say, oh, wait a minute, my thinking must be wrong here because I'm not in a harmonious state.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's one way to like self-evaluate yourself. Well, self-evaluate, yeah.
absolutely.
But so if the truth, if someone is telling you a lie based on a past event and it's coming out of their mouth as a lie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then that is not resonating correctly. Based on a past event. Well, this would probably mean the same thing if you're reading something like a book or something, a history book, that doesn't have truth in it. The resonance is not going to be there, but you have to learn to pay attention, you know, and look at things from the inside outwards instead of from outside in, you know.
Inside outwards, meaning you're looking at how it feels inside you. First.
Right, right, absolutely. But you have to be good at it. Yeah.
Well, the Meyer information always says that the truth comes from our innermost thoughts, our innermost feelings, and our innermost contemplations. So that's where you're coming from there.
Yeah. So, like, imagine you with this ability, you can pretty much go through history books and start really determining if what they're saying is true or not.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not going to resonate with the frequency of the past.
You know, it's funny that you say this, Nate. I'm sorry to interrupt you. It's funny you say this, but I think I've done this my whole dang life. And I just thought everybody else did it too. But I would always wonder why sometimes people would not be so excited as I was about something. Because to me, the truth was so glaringly obvious and majestic. But the people, I guess, couldn't even hear that resonance, or they had lost the ability to somehow listen, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, that could be it, too. I mean, because they put belief up front, and they assume everybody wants or everything has an agenda, and it's kind of like they just accepted, oh, great. So when something, like, I was a good example. So I leave the picture book on my desk at work, and a couple months ago I had a guy I work with come up to me and says, "Oh, do you believe in this?" And he's looking and he's about to tell me he believes, but instead of answering, "Yes, I believe in it," I said, "Well, it's not really about belief. It's about right here we have a two-dimensional representation of three-dimensional space," and he just ran away. He really
Are you serious?
Turn around the book. Yeah, he like when you talk about knowledge or truth, and to try to discern the truth, it scares them. It scares believers. It really does.
Wow, that's interesting, because the absurdity of his statement. Oh, you believe that? I mean, look, it's a photograph. I mean, it's right there. I mean, what is to believe about that? It's real. It's reality. It's concrete. And when you were talking about that, the thing that came to my mind when you were talking about the truth and the fact that it has a resonance, what I thought of was the Great Pyramid. If anything resonates, you know, screams outward that there was an earlier time of a higher technology, that just resonates that. I mean, but people, again, because we're these materialistic intellectual thinkers that ignore the deepest intuitions of our spirit, we just completely look over that. And the fellow that was looking at that book talking about belief was completely overlooking the fact that, you know, here you are with reality, you know, with photographs that reveal a truth. They don't have anything to do with belief. Go ahead. I'm ranting.
No. Yeah. It's. I would probably be ranting too. maybe it's because, you know, when somebody knows the truth, they feel one of the things about the truth, I think, is you feel responsible. You feel a sense of responsibility when, and that should be a good thing. But for a lot of people who have been in the doldrums of escapism and the phantasmagoria and everything else that goes along with that, you know, that's scary.
You say something very interesting there, the doldrums of escapism. Could you elaborate on that?
Let's just put it this way. With my kid, I have these little sayings, and saying number 8 is, who ensures their freedom? Who or what ensures their freedom? And the answer to that is I do, by being 100% responsible for what I do, think, feel, and say. Part of that responsibility is for your joy in life, right? Your joy in life, if you've given your joy in life away to distraction, and like the television screen or the computer or.
Wow, that is so profound, Nate. That is so profound. Could you repeat that slowly?
What did I say?
Well, you're talking about giving away your joy in life, and
yeah.
Continue.
Oh yeah, so that means like that's what happens when people are looking at computer screens all day and their video games or the Facebooks or are caught in different types of distractions. They're trying to escape, you know, or giving away their power of over themselves to determine what the joy actually is. Now you had mentioned.
Go ahead.
You had mentioned earlier on about joy, you know, reaching their highest, you know, learning and knowledge and that and the fulfillment. What was that law? The law of striving.
Striving. That is such an important law because with the law of striving, and it's really interesting, and I need to track that down. It says basically that. And I can't quote it exactly. It's the less striving, the less happiness. It's like you are designed by nature to strive to evolve. You are designed by nature to gain joy out of your toil. And when you're, like Nate says, when you're giving away your joy in life because you're staring at a computer screen or watching TV, you're literally giving away your joy. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I mean, we can go anywhere now. But, yeah, I think to get people to actually see that is very important, definitely very important. This goes back around to, you know, the dangers of media and stuff. And it goes deep. And people, it's just not something you should take in passing. Also something you had said, you know, slow down, really think about it. Don't say, oh, okay, I know it. I really know it. But just really know it, right? So
so you can't forget it when you're under pressure, right?
Right. And because you got people that depend on, you know, like the answer if you... Like my friend was telling me how he was being interviewed for a job recently, and he said this engineer interviewing him said, "Oh, you can find that on Google." You know, that was the correct answer to say, "You can find something on Google."
That's a correct answer.
Yeah, that's a correct answer during an interview now.
Wow.
Like,
that's kind of
pressure.
That's stunning. How can that be a right answer?
Well, then shouldn't your whole interview go, it's on Google?
Okay, I have to read this. The human being must be free in his or her inner self, for which reason he or she must strip off the shackles of his anxious self. It is necessary to break oneself free of all the clutchings at anything of unvalue. In order to find a relaxation in one's true innermost self. So do you think that sometimes we're clutching for something like entertainment through, you know, YouTube or through the television? And by doing that, we're really giving up our inner freedom. Is that what you were saying?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying.
Wow. Please elaborate.
I think you've already said it pretty well. And I think that, you know, when you said clutching of anything of unvalue, and you'll actually come across people that when you have mentioned, hey, why don't you try to meditate or something like this, they go off into, wow, I'd rather be doing something else. I have to go do this. I have to do this. And they fill their lives up with, and this is another form of escapism, just stuff that is trivial and meaningless. You know, do you really have to organize your fingernail paint collection, you know, in by color first, you know? this so, in alphabetical order?
So we're living kind of an escapism. That's the word you used.
Yeah.
So we're by following escapism, we're actually giving away our joy.
Uh-huh. And one of the things that I've also noticed is when there's kids that are heavily into video games, they have no inner harmony. You can easily get underneath their skin, like no problem. They have no patience. They blow up instantly. You know, it's very sad. Because when something becomes toilful, and if through toil we're supposed to gain joy, then good luck starting with them. Right?
You know what's interesting is that when your thinking is right, and you're in that state of happiness in your toil, you know, even if you don't really achieve your goal immediately right away, it doesn't even bother you because you enjoyed the process that you were going through.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, sometimes, like, even when I get like sick, for example, I've only recently just started drinking usually hot drinks with my food. And this was due to, I was trying to figure out what was going on, because every once in a while, and it seemed randomly, it seemed very random, but every once in a while I would get these extreme stomach pains, like cramps all throughout, and it would last for about 12 hours. And this is the most painful thing I've ever felt in my life, and there's nothing I could do to make it go away. And every time I would go through an episode and stuff, I'd be re-energized to figure out what was going on and stuff. And I didn't look back at it like, I hated that. I looked back at it like, okay, this is a good learning lesson. There's something there, you know, and it's trying to teach me, you know, to look, to figure it out. And, you know, if we look at pain or struggle like that, then we're looking at it the correct way. You know, if we see like all this other stuff going on in our society, with overpopulation and the megalomaniacal leaders, you know, coming through and telling us what to do and how to be, you know, then this is pretty good, because it's helping. If you learn to look at it, it's helping with our evolution. It's helping us realize what we don't want.
It was very interesting for me when you said that, and I noticed this, and it was very encouraging. Here you're having this very painful stomach ache, so you first try to figure it out yourself. You didn't run off to a doctor immediately. And I find myself doing that more and more. So by you doing that, it gave me a sense of reassurance that, you know, a lot of times that may be the right thing to do. And you never told us how you figured it out or what happened, though.
So synchronistically, I'll just put it that way, it was already calling people that had answers into my life. There were several people at work who had, in the 2 years prior to this, you know, this happening and stuff, they were telling me, hey, you know what, you shouldn't drink cold food, or you shouldn't drink cold, when you eat, you shouldn't drink cold stuff, you should only drink warm stuff, and I, you know, if you want to lose weight, also drink warm stuff. And I'm just thinking to myself, well, that seems kind of silly, because doesn't the heating of a calorie take a certain amount of, or heating of water take a certain amount of energy? And wouldn't that energy make you burn more calories in your body, and therefore? So I had this complete logic lying down. But they had told me, and so it was in the back of my head. And so I think the last episode that this happened, where I did kind of discover what was going on, I thought about it. I was thinking back, and these when they, it just popped into my head, like, oh, by the way, what about this? So I started looking into it, and it turns out that drinking cold things is pretty much a Western phenomenon. you know, and like other old cultures, they're all about, hey, when you eat your food, like the Asian cultures, when you eat your food, you drink something hot with it, and this helps with the digestive process.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because I've had times where, you know, my stomach kind of, I don't know if hurt is the right word, but it's uncomfortable, and I always drink cold stuff continually, and it's like I feel like, oh, my food's not digesting. My food's not. What the hell's going on here? So thank you for sharing. I'm going to try that.
Great, because that's exactly, you just described exactly what's going on with me.
Really?
You know, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it's random, because sometimes you're like, eh, it's okay.
Yeah, so no problem. Yeah, no problem at all. And then other times you're like, oh, my Lord. Why can I not digest my food? That's interesting. You know what it also made me think of is, and this comes back to one of the contact notes in the Meyer material, and I can look it up here in a second, but I think it was Quetzal talking to Billy about the fact that we pull out our wisdom teeth, and that's a really bad thing to do, that we need those wisdom teeth. It helps with digesting our food. And I know I told this story probably so many times, people don't want to hear it anymore. But my dentist, when I was 16 years old, he had a mercury accident. And, oh, it just devastated him. And I hadn't seen him since the accident. And when I saw him, I was supposed to be going in to get my wisdom teeth taken out. And I saw this guy, and I'm like, whoa, I need to get out of here. And he stepped out of the room for a second, and I ran off and got my car and drove away. And seriously, I did that. So here it is, I don't know, several decades later, and I still have my wisdom teeth and no problems whatsoever. So, and I'm getting, you know, I'm starting to get a little bit older now, and I still haven't had no problems. So it's funny again. Go ahead. You had a question.
Well, you had mentioned wisdom teeth. You have the gallbladder, and you also have the tonsils. And all these systems are, there's several things, right? Doctors are taught according to a belief system. So they're not really allowed to use the
logic.
Scientific method.
Right.
You know, or logic with a lot of the stuff. So they're new, and a lot of this is a gold rush for them. It's just, hey, you know what? I can yank out this guy's wisdom teeth, make an extra $100, you know, charge his insurance. Nowadays, they'll charge your insurance like $400 or $500 per wisdom tooth for a few minutes worth of work. There you go. You don't need those.
And just think about the pain that this poor individual went through to have his wisdom teeth and the long roots associated with those wisdom teeth yanked out of your head, and then you're swollen up for a week or two, and your body, your whole immune system is traumatized. It probably takes you a month or two just to heal from that completely. And think of that horrific trauma that you just put yourself through. That's what I think.
And yeah, that's true. But their mentality, that the reasons why they say what they say is absolutely asinine. Oh, nature screwed up here.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know they've got millions of years of evolution behind you, but nature decided it was going to start screwing up. But, you know, when we look at, like, the removing of the gallbladder, removing of the tonsils and stuff, this just set a lot of people back, that they had to continually pay for the rest of their life for this mistake, because we have a belief-driven medical system where you're supposed to believe what the doctor tells you. You're supposed to believe, you're not supposed to use your rush, because after all, they went and they got the letter grade in school, and therefore they must be correct. Right?
One of the things I wanted to bring up quickly, and I really need to do a show or two or three on this and also get back to studying this some more, is I was having, out of the blue, this summer, past summer, big pains in my teeth. And I got this book by a fellow named Ramiel Nagel that says you can heal your teeth naturally. So I had to change my whole diet, and I started drinking a lot of whole milk and eating cheese and eating things like chicken liver and gizzards and all this organ meat because I needed to get the vitamin A, the vitamin D and phosphorus and magnesium back in my system because our diets, all of the carbohydrates, all the breads and everything that we eat and all the sweets and all that stuff, what it does more than just rot your teeth, it depletes your body of minerals. So even if you're not eating sweets, you're eating breads and pizza and all the, you know, like the macaroni and the spaghetti and all that sort of stuff. That is depleting your body of minerals. So after you do this for 20 or 30 years, we shouldn't be eating any of that stuff. None of it. You know, and Ramiel Nagel did some research on with Weston A. Price, who went around the world and tried to figure out the cultures that didn't have any cavities. And there were still cultures on the earth that had no cavities. Anyway, they didn't eat breads. They didn't eat any sweets. They didn't eat any of the pastas. They ate the stuff I was just describing. And something I could really study in greater depth. Go ahead, Nate. I was just a side tangent there.
No, I actually have his book, How to Heal Teeth Naturally and stuff. And it's very interesting that how he tries to describe, or he goes into the description of, you know, what actually the teeth have roots, and things with roots usually try to heal themselves or have the ability to heal themselves. I can tell you a little bit about what happened to me recently. I've been meaning to get my teeth worked on, and I'm regretting it. Let's just put it that way, just mm-hmm. recently. And because basically they this company had marketed themselves as a holistic dentistry, right? And there's nothing holistic about them aside from the marketing. I went in there, they drilled, they glued. That's their MO. You go in there, you get drilled on, you glue. You get drilled on, you glued. We're I think because the way we have our farming practices, and the food we eat, mainly because there's sugar in almost everything, and it's very hard to escape it.
It is. It takes a lot of effort to escape.
It takes
let
a
me
huge
tell you.
Amount.
Yeah.
And not only that, you don't even know how addicted you are. You ever eat a healthy meal like a salad with some, you know, salmon with no salad dressing, and you're done with that meal and you're like, wow, I really feel unfulfilled. Where's the cookies at or something?
Exactly. Well, anyway, it's a long story, but I'm very interested that you did read, you probably read more of that book than I did.
Probably not. My thing is I was trying to get because work's so hectic and stuff, and this is the reason, you know, my kids got some cavities already and there's huge amounts. Well, let's look at this. When nature does screw up, one of the things is because we've helped her screw up.
Right.
And I don't know if I heard it from you recently or I just read it, but it had to do with the evolutionary benefits of not breeding across different human species.
Right, exactly.
You'll lose some of the benefits of that. You'll instead of strengthening the benefits, you'll actually lose them.
Right.
You know?
That's
so,
go ahead.
With my niece, her mouth was just not big enough for her teeth, including her wisdom teeth. So she had to get her wisdom teeth pulled, and then on top of it, her molars in the back pulled.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, because it's like, wow, it's very interesting that, you know, and like most, I think, Americans, huge mix of different human species. I know I consider myself a mutt, pretty much.
Oh, dear.
Oh, yeah. And for those people that might be thinking, well, these guys are racist or they're purist or something like this. No, we're actually just, if you learn to think logically about this stuff, then, you know, and you see it, because we're not saying that, you know, from lifetime to lifetime, I'm not going to necessarily be a white man in my next life, you know. And there's no guarantee that you'll come back into the same human species. Just on this planet, there's 5 different human species, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it, you know, even if that species is staying within their own, you know, or breeding within their own peoples, then the soul isn't disincluded. There's no rule or law saying, oh, so what I'm saying is, I know oftentimes people draw a line between, they think you're a racist or something when you start pointing at this stuff, but it really has nothing to do with that. And so I'm just doing a lousy job of telling people it's not a racist thing. So
let me go ahead and read this. And this comes from something off of that website you were just talking about earlier. Billy says here, with us, it is unfortunately so that the mixing of people and races are promoted by false humanists. However, in doing so, the exploitation of the citizens is also fostered, because the population of foreigners costs a lot of tax dollars as well as donated funds. And if you say something against this, then you will be called a racist and, if possible, even cited before the courts, because the Swiss people have indeed accepted the anti-racism laws, which has the consequence that in relation to the foreign population, you may no longer speak the truth, as the same is also the case with swindlers, liars, cheaters, and other criminals, which in Switzerland, one is no longer allowed to call that which they really are. With that, it is made possible that you can warn the honest fellow human beings from such elements. Even neo-Nazis and other extreme criminals, anarchists, and terrorist riffraff take advantage of the result. But this is what's important, I think. Unfortunately, I'm going to skip over what Patas says here. It's important. But conclusion, the mass migration and the mixing of peoples caused by the overpopulation insanity are no harmless terribleness, and certainly not any desirable culmination point in the sense of multicultural societies. Even if denied or concealed by the politician and the scientist for reason of unknowingness, for economics, that is to say, for reasons of profit or fear of erroneous assessments and accusation of racism, here emerges an enormous and unnatural foreign infiltration of peoples who for thousands of years are so culturally, linguistically, climatically, mentally, and biologically greatly adapted to their dwelling places and their homelands that strong differences will collide with each other and lead to explosive tensions between human beings. And it goes on. And earlier in this same article, it talks about how the way it undermines our genetics. In other words, when you are in a specific region of the earth, you are evolving to be able to do well in that region. So your skin changes to deal with whether it's hot or whether it's cold. Your hair changes to deal with whether, you know, it's hot or it's cold. So you have all these thousands of years of genetic adaptations to the region that you live in. And then here in our insanity, we have thousands of people leaving the desert areas and moving up into colder European climate. And on top of that, they mix through marriage and things like that with people that have completely different genetics. So both groups, with their genetic adaptations, get undermined. And it can actually lead to what it says here, to an extinction. To extinction. So I'm ranting and raving. Nate, I probably interrupted you there, but go ahead.
No. This is a conversation. No interruption. I remember reading about something about certain peoples that, you know, had gone extinct and stuff, and there's one of the peoples of one of these islands and stuff, and they were introduced to foreigners from the outside. And I don't know if it had to do with that or it had to do with they had no immunity to the diseases brought on by the foreigners. But
well, that too, that plays a role as well, you know. All these foreign peoples bringing in diseases, it's the same thing, yeah.
But even you know, maybe if you don't want to look at that, you can look at the ideologies of certain peoples. They're just not compatible with that of other peoples.
Absolutely.
You would think that the women's suffrage movement, the women's rights movement, and that is still ongoing here in the U.S. would be pretty standoffish when it came to things like extreme Islam, for example, you know, and not wanting to accept refugees from this area, because not only are they bringing that mentality into your system that you've been working so hard, you know, this wasn't, it, you know, 1960s is not that far ago, you know.
Right.
It just happened, and we're still working on it today in that, you know, women are not getting paid the same amount for the same amount of work as men do, you know.
Yeah, and think about how some of those cultures have suppressed women to such a degree that we can't even wrap our minds around that kind of thing. Well, Nate, man, I really appreciate touching base with you now. We've gone 30 minutes over, and we've only got like 2 or 3 minutes left on the stream. Is there any closing thoughts you wanted to throw out there for people?
Yeah, keep on the keeping on. Keep up the good fight.
Indeed, folks.
Don't get carried away by politics and some of the stuff that happens. But just try to improve yourself and thereby infect others around you. Purposely infect them with good things.
Absolutely. Live and help live. Well, folks, we've been speaking with Nate Mallow this evening, and I'm your host, Mark Snyder. This is Ohio Exopolitics. We've been talking about the Billy Meyer writings like The Might of Thoughts, The Way to Live, and the book The Psyche, and I think we even talked a little bit about The Goblet of Truth tonight. So if you get a chance, try to get some of this material and take a look at it yourself. Always print it out. Don't read it online. And we'll catch you next week about the same time. Have a great week. See you later. Bye-bye.